Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest is a stand-up comedian coming back to Chicago on November 19th at Lincoln Hall. Put your hands together for Matt Bronger.
Ah, I am 39. I'm unmarried. I have no children, no girlfriend, still rent an apartment. I think I'm killing you guys. I think I'm doing great. I think in the example of what a man should be at my age. Let's not lie. I don't know if I'm being sarcastic. Like, at all. At all. You know what I mean? Like, to some people, like, ugh, get it together. Some people, like a guy with, like, seven kids, like, oh, you're my hero. I love you so much. Like, never change. You know? Because I don't have a problem with me, and I'm not, you know, trying to stay this way all the time, but it just happened. The odd thing is, it would be less sad if I were gay. You know what I mean? Someone's like, oh, you're 39, you're unmarried?
Yeah.
Oh, are you gay?
No.
Oh, God. Oh. It's somehow grosser that I'm not gay, which is cool, progressively speaking. You know what I mean? Even think about it. It's kind of amazing.
Matt Bronger grew up in Portland, but came to Chicago to develop his comedy career. He took classes at I.O. and The Annoyance. He worked a ton at the Lincoln Lodge, came up with comics like Pete Holmes, Kyle Kinane, Hannibal Buress, Kumail Nanjiani, just to name a few. His latest comedy special, Big Dumb Animal, is available on Netflix. He's produced three comedy albums. He's a regular on all the late-night talk shows, and his web series, White Flight, is currently streaming on Comedy Central. Add a Nerdist podcast to the mix, and Matt Bronger's firing on all cylinders. Matt Bronger, welcome to the Download.
Thanks for having me, man. Appreciate it.
Let's talk about, I mean, you came to Chicago to develop your comedy career. Talk about that time, about coming here. What did it mean to come to Chicago and study with the people you studied with?
It really was just like a mecca for funny weirdos. I would say people that want to do comedy, but they also really like smart stuff. If that makes any sense. I at the time was just like a pretentious actor fresh out of college with a theater degree, which I got, you know, for the surefire money it will certainly bring you.
Right.
But I didn't want to go back to New York. I didn't want to go to LA and just, you know, fall flat on my face. I wanted to get good in my chosen field. And the thing that I was always good at in plays or whatnot and goofing around was, you know, being something of a clown. Be it a class clown or a professional one. So Chicago just seemed like an amazing fit, and it was a great place to spend my 20s, I'll tell you right now.
Yeah. So, I.O. and Annoyance, taking classes were mainly for improvisation. Talk about why you went into stand-up comedy and didn't stick in the improv world.
Well, I got into improv because I just learned what it was, and I was like, well, that sounds amazing. And I got the chance to I did levels 1 through 5 at I.O., and I studied under Del Close literally months before he died. Who, if people don't know, Del Close basically invented improv. Mm-hmm. And then I went to do the Annoyance Theater, where I trained under, you know, Susan Messing and other amazing people. But then I was still on my team at I.O., but they wanted to add another level, like a 6th level. And my feeling was like, well, all right, I don't see why I have to. Like, I studied under, you know, Bruce Lee, so I don't know why I'm going to study under this other guy. But I was like, look, I'll do it when I have the money. I don't have the money. And I was a starving waiter at the time. They were like, well, you could always just be an intern, which at that time meant, if you know, if you're a guy my size, you'll be lifting kegs all night. You'll be barback and make no money.
Right.
And so I was like, no, I'm not going to do that either. I don't have the time. And they're like, it's fine. And then 3 months later, I got unceremoniously removed from my team. And I'd already been doing stand-up, and that's you know, the time I say that I turn to the dark side of the force. You know, that's when my lightsaber turned red. When I'm like, oh, I'm off the team. I'll show you all. So I just started doing stand-up. And it honestly was a way better fit. When I moved to L.A., I took classes at UCB, and I'm kind of a part of that community ever since. But I never wanted to be on a team. I feel like improv can just teach you to be a better performer, be a lot looser. It's almost like going to the gym if you're an athlete doing improv.
Yeah.
You know, it was just nice to do a little training there. So, I mean, I kind of feel like I was meant to be a stand-up much more than I was meant to be improviser. But at the same time, I still respect that art form a great deal, and nobody does it better than Chicago.
What I love about, you know, your career is it really was at the time in the late 90s when you were in Chicago, it was a very sketch and improv-based world, the comedy ensemble.
Yeah.
Stand-up was, you could get a gig at Zany's and possibly, if you're lucky, go out to St. Charles or, you know, wherever.
Right.
But you and others, and something I named, Hannibal Buress, Kyle Kinane, you developed almost an alternative scene. You started doing shows with Mark Gary at the Lincoln Lodge, and and starting this concept of almost bringing stand-up back to Chicago, an alternative scene. Talk about that. Talk about the idea of getting together with guys like Kyle and Hannibal and Kumail and the others who started that scene here in Chicago.
Well, it was like there wasn't one. So we basically, I mean, stand-up, if you talk to anyone who's involved in Chicago comedy at the time, was just corny. They didn't see it. This is kind of before you had your Mr. Show, and the closest thing you had to any comedy that anyone respected from those guys would be like maybe Mitch Hedberg, but even they thought he was maybe too weird.
Yeah.
So we were all just fans of comedy, and we just started doing open mics, and we met each other through open mics. And I remember a guy named Mick Betancourt, who now writes hour-long dramas in L.A., go figure, was the guy who kind of gave me my start and would put me up. He was good friends with John Roy, who's a long time, you know, who's a old Chicago head like myself. And we just started going up places like the Lincoln Lodge, and especially a place called the Lion's Den, which is an open mic we'd all hit on Mondays, that you never knew who's going to show up. I remember George Carlin showed up one night, and there's also this weird Japanese guy that would eat VHS tapes. Like, you just didn't know who was going to come or do whatever they wanted to do on stage. It was not so much a performance art thing. You really kind of had to be trying to be funny at least, but it was a really great place to develop your stuff. And we kind of just got together. It's funny that at no point when I was back there did we see ourselves as a scene. And that's not to sound like, we were so cool. We were just so clueless. We didn't understand like what a scene was. Do you know what I mean? If that makes any sense.
It does. Matt Bronger is my guest tonight, former Chicago stand-up who's now living in Los Angeles. He's got a comedy special, Big Dumb Animal, which is on Netflix, as well as his web series, White Flight, which is currently streaming on ComedyCentral.com. All right, Matt, you know, it's interesting because those comics, you guys all sort of around the same time made that leap, you know, almost transferred an entire scene from Chicago to Los Angeles, everyone from T.J. Miller to you to Kumail. And, you know, you've had a lot of success. Talk about that time, about the idea of leaving Chicago and why there was such a mass exodus.
Well, I mean, I can only speak for myself, just being like, I feel like I'm a hamster on a wheel. I feel like I wait tables a couple nights a week, and I go to try to do stand-up the rest of the week, but I don't make any money, and it's not getting me anything. And I remember, you know, everybody has this, hopefully it's diminished by now, but everyone always had this kind of idea of like, oh, you got to go to L.A., you got to be just right, you got to be perfect. I don't think that's right. I think you should have developed your voice before you come to L.A., hopefully. Mm-hmm. But there are people that develop their voices in L.A. too. But as for us, I know Kyle and I kind of were like, all right, let's go together. So I'll go, and then, you know, you come a couple months after, and we'll work it out with our jobs and everything. And, you know, I mean, I think Kyle still lived with his mom up till then. He would basically just drive to his job and was still living out in Addison.
Yeah.
But we got a place together, and, you know, I knew Hannibal went to New York. TJ didn't come out until probably 2 years. I actually didn't even meet TJ until I came back to Chicago to visit.
Oh, really?
Kind of this thing, yeah, where people are like, oh, you got to see this guy. He's a hilarious maniac, and he is. And the great thing about back then is I knew all those guys I started out with, guys and gals, were going to be kind of big, if not huge. You know, TJ was always one of those guys that was like, oh, this guy's, you're either never going to hear from him or he's just going to be on fire. And he's on fire, so that's awesome. But, like, same with Pete Holmes, same with Hannibal. Hannibal, when I met him, I was like, okay, there's no one like you in the world. Like, you've got your niche, you know. Like, I don't think, like, one of the biggest compliments you can get in Hollywood is when you're a type, you know. Like, I don't think I'm exactly, I don't think they're well, we want a Matt Bronger type, but who knows. But I know sometimes they'll go, we want a Kyle Kinane type. I don't think there is a Hannibal Buress type.
Right.
I don't think there is. I don't know if they're going to bring some guy in that talks like, I just remember someone was like, have you seen Hannibal? I was like, no. Wow, it's crazy, crazy name. Like, the African Conqueror. And they were like, yeah, he's got this black comic. He's got a joke about having a silver arm. And I was like, take me to him. You know, like, who is this man? And so he was, you know, he was kind of coming up as we were leaving, as we were kind of like, oh,
right,
we're like the big fish on the scene or whatever it is. he was still kind of coming up. Some people went to New York, some people went to LA.
I'm interested in how those relationships have developed over time. I mean, you guys are all now in the Hollywood scene. You're writing, you're on television shows, you work for Comedy Central. What do your relationships from Chicago mean to you when, you know, in 2016, when you guys are all working and working at a high level?
Well, it means a lot. I mean, you know, we don't all see each other as much as we used to. Kyle and I still do. Kyle's like the closest, one of the closest things I have to a brother. We check in when we're on the road or when we're, you know, in town and things. But everybody else, I kind of see when I see. One of the funniest things to me was when Kumail and TJ and Thomas Middleditch all got on, got cast in Silicon Valley, and then they got them together. And Mike Judge was like, wait, you guys all know each other? They're like, yeah, you didn't know that? Oh, we're all friends.
That's funny.
And yeah, no, it was just a surprise thing, which was hilarious to me. I mean, to me, speaks really highly of Chicago. I mean, I just did a couple scenes in Christopher Guest's new movie, but I got cut out. But at the same time, like, almost everybody I worked with started out doing improv in Chicago.
Wow.
You know, and it's not even that thing of it's not that they look at your resume and go, oh, you worked in Chicago. Great, you're hired. That wouldn't mean a thing to them. It's kind of just the best people come out of there. You know what I mean? In terms of that world.
Being a working comic and you have done such a great job of diversifying your platforms. I mean, you have the podcast with Nerdist and the web series on Comedy Central and a stand-up, you know, series that you've done so much stand-up on late-night primetime programs. You got the special, which is on Netflix. Talk about the idea of being a comic in 2016 where you have to be a jack-of-all-trades.
Well, I mean, I lucked out because I started out as an actor when I was younger, and I always wrote my own stuff for stand-up and would write sketches and things. And, you know, in a way, that kind of goes back to Chicago, just kind of having to form your own little groups. But I feel like one of the biggest mistakes I've made, and I've made it along the way here and there, is when you just you hope something comes to you, or you think you deserve something to come to you. You kind of have to, as Robin Williams put it, be prepared for luck. So when someone does come to you and they go, well, have you written anything? You go, oh yeah, right, I have this. Or if you're pitching things, you have a couple ideas. I think it's not something you have to really overthink or have the perfect thing, but you should have a couple things, a couple ideas. Thank God none of us are archivists of ancient civilizations and we're all competing about who can cover Mesopotamia better. It's all from like our own minds. So you can go as silly as you want or as weird or as scary or anything. But I feel like everything takes practice. And as much as I love, you know, drinking and eating and being a lazy fat F, like, the more I do that, the more that's practiced as well.
Right, exactly.
You kind of got to balance it all. You have to practice being creative, and even if you're writing garbage, just go ahead and write. In terms of getting stuff on different platforms, it's really difficult. I mean, it's very nice you say that, but I can't tell you how many things I've had that haven't gone, that I've pitched everywhere and no one wants to buy it. And that's I think that's true of most people that are in entertainment. Once you have kind of a team behind you, representatives and things that get your stuff out there, it's really hard. I mean, I often think of that oft-cited source that said that, like, Abraham Lincoln ran for office, like, I don't know, 40 times or something insane, where you do the point where you're like, you know what, like, he never did that thing where he's like, I just don't think people like me.
Well, I mean, there's something to it. I mean, being an actor and being a comedian as well. I mean, one thing that's rarely talked about, I mean, it's obviously perseverance is a big part of the world that you live in. But rejection is something that you have to learn to deal with, right? I mean, that's something that for every series you have on Comedy Central, there are 15 or 20 that people said absolutely not.
Of course. And you're going to have stuff that you believe is absolutely perfect for this network, or you believe it would be something that everyone would watch, and it's whatever, you know, you'll enter into situations where they're like, all we want is a TV show by and about Patrick Stewart. You bring Patrick Stewart in there and he's written it about himself, and they go, you know, I don't think this is exactly it. Like, that kind of thing will happen. And you just, it boggles the mind. I have a project right now with my cousin. He just had his book just got made into a movie with James Franco and Seth Rogen, and we had this project at Showtime for a while, and now we're taking it elsewhere. But I had to tell him, you got to let go of logic. You have, because he's from the world of writing books and getting books sold. So unless, like, you will find fish that will not make sense, and it's going to drive you insane. And I almost feel bad for dragging him into my world.
Do you deal with it? How do you deal with it? What's the tonic? What's the advice you give others to deal with rejection?
You got to have a life outside of it, and you can't place all your happiness in that basket because you'll go crazy. I like the fact that my life is about the furthest thing from Entourage. You know, I you know what I mean? Like, I don't want a crew of clowns around me that are just rooting for me. And all I do is I'm getting so laid, man. This is great, bro. I like that I've got a great bunch of idiot friends that I like, you know, like some of them are kind of, I'll say charmingly scumbaggy, but not like those guys where they're not even interesting. You know, Mike Burns comes to mind.
I love Mike.
Yeah. So it's, you know, you have to have other things. Like, right. I mean, I got to go to, wine country for my birthday with a bunch of yahoos, and we rented a big house and just lived in it for the weekend. Like, I can't tell you how lucky I feel to be able to do that.
Matt Bronger is a stand-up comedian. He's coming to Chicago on November 19th. He's coming back to Chicago for a show at the Lincoln Hall. You can check out also Big Dumb Animal, which is his special that's just on Netflix right now. And you can check out his web series, White Flight, which is streaming on ComedyCentral.com. Matt, a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for checking in, and have a great show on the 19th.
Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate the help, and keep on keeping on, man.